WIOX is supported by Pika Moose Restaurant on State Route 28 in Big Indian, with farm-to-table cuisine Thursday through Monday, indoor dining at a safe distance from 4 to 9 p.m., and patio-heated outdoor dining on the moonlit deck. Take out till 10. PikaMoose.com or 845-254-6500. 845-254-6500. WIOX is supported by NBT Bank, with locations in Margaretville, Grand Gorge, Hobart, Middleburg, Schoharie, Cobleskill, Cooperstown, Oneonta, and Windham, all with friendly local teams offering a wide range of products and digital tools designed to be easy to use to meet life's triumphs, changes, and challenges, from the smallest moments to the biggest milestones, with confidence. NBT Bank, member FDIC. WIOX is supported by Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES.
Hi, this is John Sturman, host of It's All Music, heard every other Thursday at 2 here on WIOX Roxbury. As Maya Angelou says, giving liberates the soul of the giver. Liberate your soul by joining the Holiday Fundraising Binge and making a tax-deductible donation at WIOXradio.org. Every dollar you give to the station will be matched. You'll help us all to keep community radio live and local in the Catskill Mountains. WIOX, here for you, supported by you.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the Radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Oh, things are good. How are you, Ryan?
I'm all right. You know, it's a good day. Cutting trees, trying to enhance wildlife habitat. So opening up some oak and hickory trees, not bad.
Yeah, we've been doing it for 2 days, and we'll probably be at it for another two.
Yeah.
This week, and then all next week.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of cutting.
A lot of habitat made. Yeah, we'll cover, let's see, 13 acres by the end of next week, I hope.
Cut a lot of white pine.
A lot of big white pine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had a bigger saw and a bigger bar for those.
Yeah, I know it. Well, 20-inch bar's doing it. Yeah, got to sharpen that chain tomorrow morning, though.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for them hickory trees.
Hickory nuts. So what have you been up to in the woods?
Well, hunting. but not seeing many deer. That's kind of normal first week or so after gun season opens. I had a lot of good luck during bow season, but gun season's here, and I don't know, they're kind of scared. Down in Gardner, where I hunt, I think some of them might be dead from the episodic, what is it?
Man, hemorrhagic disease.
Yeah.
EHD.
Yeah, EHD. Up here, I haven't heard of any deer dying from that. I guess it's once you get one freezing, the disease is killed. But so they did have some die-off in the Walk Hill Valley and in the lower elevations.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out in the next couple of years, I guess.
Yeah.
But the South gets it often. It's not uncommon. Southern states.
Right. Yeah, it's just part of the deer herd. You know, they've kind of developed an immunity to it. So I went walking up in the mountains, took a romantic walk with the rifle.
I did a lot of that.
Romantic walks?
Yeah. Well, I'm not in love with my rifle, but well, I do like it a lot.
I don't know. This is your rifle. There are many like it, John, but that one's yours.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Ryan's Creed.
Many a man has fallen in love with his rifle.
So, how was your romantic walk with your rifle?
The romance was good. I had a spot in mind up in the mountains, and didn't see much sign on the way there. And when I got to my spot, there was a lot of buck sign. I went into the buck's bedroom. I was in the house where he sleeps, but I did not see him there.
He must have been in the kitchen if you were in the bedroom.
He was somewhere else. But he was there. There was fresh droppings, and his rub line was well established, and I could see where he's dropping off the mountain into probably to chase the does or the girls somewhere, although I didn't see one doe. So he's living up in a very nice place. Most remote area of the Catskills, I would say.
What elevation were you at?
I was at 2,900 to 2,700 feet.
Yep.
Yeah.
I hunted a lot. I was all over the place. I hunted a lot at 2,600 to 3,000. Hit 3,100 once. Well, actually, I hit 3,800 once going up and over a mountain. But damn. I wasn't hunting. I was just heading to the other side.
Damn. Why'd you go up to the top?
Did you go around? I didn't want to go. I was coming back around to get to the front side. I was hunting the mountain back to front, not front to back.
Yeah, all right.
Because if I ended the day on the back side, it'd be a long walk home in the dark.
Yeah.
So I just spent the morning, skipped the morning hunt, and just hiked in.
Yeah.
And hunted my way out, and I hit the road at dark.
Nice.
So, anyway, I found something that interests me. I don't know how accurate my altimeter is. It's just based off of the GPS on my phone, which has a topographic map on it.
That's probably accurate.
Accurate enough.
Yeah.
At 2,734 feet, I found barbed wire.
3,000 what?
2,734 feet.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Dr. Michael Kudish, who's been on the show, wrote the book, A Catskill Forest, A History.
Yep.
He has... I believe he said that the average maximum pasture in the Catskills is 2,700 feet.
So I found it. I've hunted this mountain a lot, and I've never found sign of agriculture up there in the past.
Oh, wow.
And it was very...
South side?
This would be on the east side.
Southeast side?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
I'd have to look at a map again.
It won't
again.
Be on the north side ever, that's for sure. Most likely.
No, definitely not on the north side.
Yeah.
It would be the mostly east, maybe I guess a little bit southeast. But anyway, looking down into off of a point, though, down in would be a big valley that definitely still has remnants of agriculture now.
Wow.
But like I said, it was just one small piece,
that's
and
high.
I stumbled upon it just because I saw a bump on a tree. That just didn't look right. I said, you know what? That's familiar. It looks like something I see down in the valley, and it's a scar over from barbed wire.
Yeah.
That you normally find along a stone wall in trees. And I'm looking around. I can't find anything. And then finally, I just scuffed the leaves a little bit, and there's a little bit of metal there. And I pulled out a piece of barbed wire about a foot long.
There's got to be a foundation up there somewhere.
It has
to be.
I don't know. I'd have to do more hunting and more finding, but you know what? We don't really hunt that spot that often, just because if you did, if you did get a deer out there, it is would never be fun to get it off. So we really just start there and move out. So I came in from a different angle than I normally do and dropped a little bit lower. Usually I come around the top of the hill more at like more close to 3,000 feet. So I was a little lower starting than I normally would have. So
yeah, I mean, maybe the foundation's at 2,500 feet, a couple hundred feet lower. But those oak and the mountain laurel that you've talked about probably has something to do maybe with that old farmstead.
I found one oak up there.
Yeah.
One oak tree. And it's on a rock face where it's getting plenty of sunlight, and it's about 25 inches in diameter.
Yeah, when I come over the mountain hiking on my hike, I go over 2,600 feet is where this farm is. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's all maple, but there's a couple oak in there. And one of the oaks I always sit under before I – it's like the last thing I do before I go back to the truck on my trip. And I call it the big oak. And you can tell this oak was all out by itself in the pasture.
Huh.
And it's still there. It's huge, huge.
Yep.
Just a huge, gigantic oak.
Now, if there is a farm or a foundation up there, I just don't know where the access would be.
It's got to be a road.
I just don't know how they would get up it, because it's on a very – where I found this barbed wire was on a very narrow point.
Huh.
And both sides drop off it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it was just a really big pasture coming, because the flat below it must be 2,400, 2,300 maybe before you get down off that point into another little valley bottom.
Listen, man, I mean, when I was – I don't know how high Sugarloaf – mountain is not the Sugarloaf Mountain on the Devil's Path. The Sugarloaf Mountain above Rondout Reservoir, that's pretty high. It might be 3,000 feet. They clear the entire top of that.
Wow.
There's plow equipment up on top.
Holy.
The reason why I know that is because I used to paint line for New York State DEC back in 2000, and we were following the barbed wire most of the time because that's where the line was. But on top, it's completely cleared. I found plow equipment and everything, and, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's amazing what people did. But, you looking at the trees, though, you'd have no idea there was agriculture there. That's been abandoned a long time.
Yeah, mostly maple.
Big sugar maple.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing. And then stone walls?
No stone walls. And just above it, like, you go up to the next rise, to the next flat on the mountain, which might be another 75 feet in elevation above it, and the forest type changes. So that's another indicator. Much older forest, that big, giant yellow birch. When the bark starts looking, it doesn't get paper anymore. Those are really old.
Yeah.
So that had to have been the maximum pasture line right there.
Yep, sounds like it.
Anyway, I'd like to go back and explore.
It sounds very similar to where I hunt. And it makes sense, right? I mean, similar things were going on throughout the mountains.
Yeah, and funny thing with the deer is, I mean, we know they're creatures of edge. That's the edge that they were using around the hill, the forest type edge.
Yeah,
that's where I found all the buck sign, all the scrapes, all the rubs was right at the edge of that really old birch forest where it transitions into that large sugar maple, old pasture.
It's pretty crazy to think about that, we were talking about this earlier on the way to work today, and, you do things habitat-wise, and it manipulates the deer's movements, but there's still things that there's places they go no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's just passed on, I think, through generation,
Yeah. There's a lot
of... that edge you're talking about...
Right.
...is long gone, and yet they're still doing it.
They're still there. There's a lot of study now in wildlife about epigenetics, and that's the passing down of genetics through multiple generations of learning, I guess you could say. So,
is it really genetics then at that point?
It can't be, but there's a lot of study about that movement and disease and pathogens is where the study lies, but. I don't know. There's theories about the way animals move and deer move, and based on how their grandfathers or great grandfathers moved. And
yeah,
I don't know.
What? As much as the white-tailed deer is the most studied animal in North America and maybe the world, I could vouch there's still plenty we don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, tonight's topic on From the Forest is the flying squirrel. Well, once in a while, we just pick a random animal that's from the forest, obviously. And this one's a flying squirrel, one of my favorites. So, first time I'd known about flying squirrels. Okay. But then, my friend and I were cutting down a sugar maple over a house. The house was endangering. Well, the house was not endangering. The maple was endangering the house and needed to be removed. So, my friend's up there cutting, and it's an old, gnarly sugar maple. You know, plenty of cavities in it. And he's on one side, whittling away. And I'm on the ground, and I'm looking up, you know, watching everything safe and removing brush as it comes down. And I see a squirrel come out, a flying squirrel. And he just kind of goes up. He's on the other side, though, of my friend. He doesn't know it. I'm like, dude, there's a flying squirrel right by your hand. He's like, I can't. What are you talking about? It's on the other side? I'm like, yeah. Anyway, he can barely hear me because the saw's going and all this. Flying squirrel goes up maybe 10 feet, 15, and then glides, as they say, 50 yards or more across the road. This is in West Shokan, and lands in another old sugar maple. And at the very end, it takes its tail like an air damper and, you know, goes back up and just makes a nice landing. So I saw it, but, you know, you don't see it that well. Then another one and another one and another one. So now I'm really getting to see. I'm concentrating on their flight now more, you know what I mean? Instead of watching them go, like, I don't know. I see their whiskers. I see everything as they go through the air. I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, dude, there's another one. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you're missing the show, man. There's these flying squirrels coming out. Eight or more came out. And to this day, I think it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen, wildlife experience.
Did he ever see one?
I don't think he ever saw one.
Wow.
No. Which makes sense. I mean, you're up in the tree, you're concentrating on cutting, and not only that, he was thinking about his placement and where his line should be. And, you know, I was watching him too, but after eight or so, I was like, all right, you know, this is crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
Pretty awesome. Yeah, my first time seeing a flying squirrel, I must have been, I don't know, 12 or 14, and I got a hold of a hatchet or a small axe or something out of the garage, and I don't know, doing what boys do. I walked up on the, across the field, across the stream, up onto the mountainside, on the property we owned, and just start whacking trees.
Yeah.
You know, what boys do.
Right.
No intention to cut anything down, just walking up to every single one I walked by and hit it with a hatchet.
Right.
And I guess it was a 2-foot axe, and I came to a snag. It was a dead standing tree, and I whacked that one, and out from the top of that snag, which was probably 30 feet tall, was a hole, and two flying squirrels flew out. And I didn't know what they were. I mean, I knew what flying squirrels were, but I had never seen one, and I actually at the time didn't even know that they were in the Catskills.
Right.
I didn't know it was a local animal, so I was in shock and awe, and I had to go find this out, and I called my cousin, I think, and he's a wildlife biologist now. He's been on this show, but he knows everything, and he told me there was a flying squirrel you saw.
It's pretty neat. Yeah. The first time I saw him was at night. My former landlord had a spotlight on a hemlock tree. We'd watch him fly around. You could just see shadows. You couldn't really see him. It was neat.
They have big eyes that glow at night.
Well, they just did a study. I think it was University of Northland College in Wisconsin, and they found that flying squirrels fluoresce pink when an ultraviolet light is shown upon them.
Oh yeah.
And great other squirrels, they don't do it, but for some reason they have no idea why this is.
Their fur, you mean?
I don't know. They say they fluoresce pink when they show an ultraviolet light on them.
Huh.
I know. I need more information, but
well, I wonder if it's their eyes that.
No, that's something to do with their body.
Their body.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
As far as I understood it, and they don't know why or what the meaning of it is or evolutionary trait. But the flying squirrel, there's actually two types of flying squirrels in New York State. So which one you saw, who the hell knows. But there's a northern flying squirrel and the southern flying squirrel. and we have overlap in the. I'm sure we have overlap in the Catskills for sure.
Wow.
But we'll get into that later on about, you know, where the southern is mostly found in the northern. But there's 15 genera of flying squirrels in two subtribes, and there's tribe Pteromyini, and I'm not even attempt to say that, subtribe Glycomyina. Man.
Glycomyina. Like glaucoma. It means something with your eyes?
I guess. But there's three species, basically, in North and Central America. And the two that we're going to talk about is Glaucomys cibrinus. That's northern flying squirrel. I'm just butchering the Latin in this. Nah, it's dead language, right? Then there's Glaucomys volans, which is southern flying squirrel. For the rest of the show, we're going to go by the common name. Okay, John?
Yeah, definitely.
And then there's another one, Oregonsis. I guess this is a new one they've actually found or whatever. Humboldt's flying squirrel, and that's, I think, out in the northwest. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is the flying squirrel.
Well, it'll just get you down if you let life get to you. 'Cause everybody said something, none of it's true. Well, I just don't care when them times get hard, 'cause I got everything I need right out in my yard. Well, I love my truck, 'cause she's right outside. I ain't got much luck, but I sure got a ride. It don't matter who lived, it don't matter who lied. I got my truck right by my side. You got Sally and you got Sue, and I got a Chevrolet. She takes me home after work. Don't ever miss a day. She don't care what I am. She don't care what I ain't. But she ain't no cheap pickup haul. She just needs a cup of cold paint. I love my truck. It's right outside. I ain't got much love, but I sure got a ride. Don't matter who lived. Don't matter who lied, I've got my truck right by my side. Yeah. She don't care if I don't work a lick. She'll start every time if the choke don't stick. I know that she will never doubt me. 'Cause she never leaves home without me. See, I love my truck. It's right outside. I ain't got much luck, but I sure got a ride. Don't matter who lived, don't matter who lied. I've got my truck right by my side. I got my truck right by my side. Yeah. I've got my truck right by my side.
All right. Choke on a truck. How about that? That's an old one.
That's a very old one.
That's Glen Campbell, man. It's not a very Glen Campbell-ish song.
I've never heard that one.
Yeah. You know, from the Wichita Lineman to I Love My Truck.
Just singing about his life.
What else do you need? A truck? A gun? Some want a dog. I don't want a dog.
Dogs are good?
Dogs are good. Yeah. All right. Well, we're talking about the flying squirrel. And they don't actually fly. They glide. And they can glide from one tree to the next. And they use a potassium. It's a furry parachute-like membrane that stretches from its little wrist to its ankles It's pretty neat, man. When you see these guys fly through the air and you see them hold the potassium tight, it's funny, I think.
It looks like they have a cape.
They do have a cape. It's a potassium.
Right. Correct.
And it's awesome.
Do you want a potassium?
Some humans do. Have you seen those guys flying around, gliding? Have you seen this?
Yeah, when I have. When they jump off of mountains and they're just...
People are dying, but most people, well, a lot of people aren't. But I guess it's the most dangerous sport right now.
I can see why.
I watched it. I went down the YouTube rabbit hole one night and watched this. I couldn't stop.
Do they have a parachute?
No, they have a gliding thing.
The potassium.
It's kind of like a potassium.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's a suit.
No thanks. I'm good.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. So they have a potassium. It goes from their wrist to their ankles. And the tail provides stability, right? Pretty similar. Other than that, they're very similar to other tree squirrels, except for they're smaller. And they have longer limb bones, right? So they can stretch out their legs and arms and whatnot.
Okay.
But their hands and feet are smaller than like a gray squirrel or a red squirrel. These longer limbs are used to steer in flight, which is awesome. That's how they steer, man. They use their little hands and feet and steer away. And then the tail is just used to slow them down as an air brake.
Uh-huh.
And to provide stability, which is cool.
Yeah, well, if you've never seen one, that's pretty cool. Like Ryan described in the beginning. It's something that you'll just be in awe. But, you know, a lot of people, they're a nuisance for.
Nuisance? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was reading about this. I guess people's attics are full of flying squirrels.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if that's what I've been hearing. No, I've never seen them.
They're very loud, very loud. I've got arguably the nicest chicken coop ceiling in the Catskills because of a flying squirrel. It's a knotty tongue and groove pine.
Oh, yeah?
It was given to me when I was building my chicken coop, and I used it for before I put the shingles on. I put it for the wood on top, but it was because it was in a camp, and the flying squirrels moved in and urinated in the attic and stained all that nice, knotty pine, disgusting color. So, chickens got something nice to look at every night.
That's cool. No kidding. Yeah, flying squirrels, yeah. So, evolution, all right? Their sister species is any kind of tree squirrel, which is the gray and red squirrel. And here's another word. They have monophyly, which is Greek for one tribe. I guess they've done molecular studies that indicate that it comes from 18 to 20 million years ago and comes from a common ancestor. So, I don't know. I guess there's not much divergence from this ancestor of 20 million years ago. And there used to be much debate surrounding this. I don't know who's debating this, but someone is. I know most people are not.
I don't know. Genetic genetic people, I guess.
So, but the deviation, as I said before, is mostly by growing that longer limb bones and shorter hands and feet. So the shorter hands and feet do make it more difficult for the flying squirrel to be, well, a ground squirrel. They don't really like to be on the ground for that reason. So, why the adaptation? All right, so the hypothesis is, well, it saves energy. Think about how much energy a squirrel spends going up and down every tree to get to the next, or doing some crazy, as most tree stand hunters know. You watch these guys make some acrobatic moves, and it's not always graceful.
No, I've seen some fall and catch themselves on the next branch going down.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen squirrels drop out of trees while on consultations with the Catskill Forest Association.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've never seen one fall out of a tree.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. Yep, you know, it's pretty crazy.
I'm just bouncing.
I forgot about that just now. Yeah. Yeah, this one I think was a little hurt, but I've been seeing some fat squirrels this year, by the way.
Wow, they got a lot of food in the woods. A lot of acorns.
Maybe from last year. The acorns, I don't see that many acorns this year.
Well,
you are?
One spot I hunt, there was a crop. So I guess maybe I'm jaded by that. But yeah, walking in, it's like walking on marbles.
Yeah, some fatties out there. So the other thing is, so less climbing up and down. They can cover a larger area of the forest which means they can get to more food sources, and escape predation. They're mostly nocturnal, so I don't know what the hell is going to get them. Maybe
owls.
An owl.
Yeah, definitely owls.
Yeah, an owl, but geez, good luck, owl. I mean, he's got to be pretty crafty to do that.
I think they are. I think they're very crafty.
Damn. I don't know. I mean, if you saw a flying squirrel glide like I did, John, I don't know. I guess they could intercept him.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Man, that'd be crazy to see.
Plus, I mean, owls are quite silent. It's
yeah.
Coming from nowhere.
Yeah. I didn't know this. I just assume they are always in hollow logs, but I guess they do build their nests. As I said before, they're nocturnal and omnivorous. Well, I didn't talk about the omnivorous, but they eat mostly fruit, seeds, buds, flowers, and insects. So if you feel like your bird feeder is getting raided and you don't know what it is, hey, it could be at night from flying squirrel.
Uh-huh.
And we can't stop flying squirrels. Now, CFA, Catskill Forest Association, puts up bird feeders that we can say keeps away gray squirrels and red squirrels. But all bets are off for flying squirrels.
Yeah, I mean, something can glide in there, then
yeah, forget it, man. Forget it. So, if they're doing that, who knows? But here's the thing. They not only eat fruit, seeds, buds, they also eat flowers, insects, gastropods, spiders, birds, eggs, and tree sap, which is pretty neat. But the northern flying squirrel, guess what this guy mostly eats? Lichen and fungi.
Have fun with that diet.
Yeah.
I guess it's abundant, though. Don't have to go far for food.
Right. I mean, that's the only thing you got up in some of these northern boreal forests and northern hardwood forests, you know. There's no acorns and hickory nuts. You're going to find most of the southern flying squirrels in where there's more hickory nuts and acorns, supposedly. So, the flying squirrel is born naked and helpless, but within 5 weeks, it already has tryouts for gliding, and by 10 weeks, it's gliding. So, pretty crazy.
Right. That's altricial.
What?
Naked and helpless. Altricial.
Amazing. That's a good one, man. You had to dig deep for that one.
You know what the opposite is? You're born ready to go?
I didn't know what altricial was. No, I don't.
Precocial.
Wow. Amazing.
Uh-huh.
So deer are patricial.
Precocial.
Precocial. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're walking in minutes or hours, really.
Yeah.
Yep.
Huh. And humans are definitely
altricial.
Yeah.
For
no doubt.
Years.
Years. Many some years. Into the 30s.
Before, yeah, 30s, 40s.
You know, who knows? So, the glide. Yeah, let's talk about the glide. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about flying squirrels and from the forest. So, the glide can be anywhere up to 300 feet. That's pretty far, man.
100 yards?
That's the record that they know of, 300 yeah. feet.
So,
300 feet is long. Almost a tenth of a mile.
Now,
was it 500 feet?
I want to know how they did this. They must have taken a squirrel and pushed it out of a tree. And
I don't know. People study all sorts of things that I'm surprised they.
I mean,
they
it's do. Not. It's not like you're just going to casually observe that. That was a pre-planned study. Like let's see how far we can get this squirrel to go.
I don't know. I mean, people study frogs and stuff, and they have what antifreeze in them, so they don't freeze during the winter. I mean, someone studied it. I'm sure someone studied in flying squirrels. Someone out there.
Well, I'm sure there are. I'm just saying. I think that person tested the squirrel. I think he pushed it to his limits. I don't think they just casually observe a flying squirrel fly that far.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, if you see where it started from, and you can just see what tree it went to, you know?
That's true.
But who's to say what the longest is? I mean, sure, might be one out there that's more than 300 feet. So, it's like I said before. Oh, no, I didn't say this before. So, we said that it steers using its, you know, its legs and its feet, right? Or whatever. But it has this small cartilaginous wrist bones, which I guess no other gliding species has. So, it's specific to the flying squirrel, some kind of cartilage within its legs and arms that make it even better at gliding, I guess, than other ones. By the way, there's other gliding species. So if you're wondering what they are, there's a gliding possum that lives in, like, Australia.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a flying lemur. Lemur. Jesus Christ. Southeast Asia. There's a scaly-tailed squirrel that lives in Central Africa. And as I said before, a possum species in Australia. Yeah. But they don't have this cartilaginous material in their legs, I guess. So, I don't know. So there you go, John. Did you know there was a gliding possum?
I'm imagining it, but it can't be what's in my mind. I have to look at the picture now.
Possum's already a weird creature. We talked about the possum, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a strange one. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is the flying squirrel.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought-and-died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought-and-died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
All right, that's Merle Haggard talking about some squirrely guy giving him grief. You know?
Yeah.
What do you think?
What's a squirrely guy look like?
I don't know. Probably some skinny guy talking smack.
Tall, thin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Squirrely guy. You know? Yeah, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is the flying squirrel. And let's get into squirrels in New York State. Flying squirrels.
All right.
Really should be gliding squirrels. Sounds pretty good, too.
More descriptive.
More descriptive, yes. Home to two species, the southern and the northern. Southerns are mostly found south of the Mohawk Valley, but there is overlap. Plenty of it. Southern, I was looking at a map, and New Hampshire, for example, you're going to find them near the coast, but in the Whites and north of that, you're going to find the northern flying squirrel. And they basically said, wherever you find hickory nuts and acorns, oak trees, you're going to find more southern. Or where there's been recent clearing and then it grows back to hardwoods, you're going to find more southern flying squirrels.
Okay.
And then once you get into hemlocks and more conifer trees, you're going to find more northerns. And that's because these northerns. You know, Merrill used to make fun of people like there's that old, I don't know if it's a myth or not, they used to call people that Adirondack meant bark eaters.
No,
I never heard that myth. I don't know if it's true or not. But to me, that's kind of like the northern flying squirrel, man. It's like it's reduced to eating only lichen and fungi.
And you'll find that in a deep, dark, damp forest.
Yeah, the squirrel eats lichen and fungi for the most part. Now, both are omnivorous, so if it comes across carrion, the flying squirrel will eat it. But lichen and fungi is what the northerns are feeding upon. Poor guys.
I mean, there can't be a lot of nutrient value. They must eat a lot.
I guess. So, you know, I'm thinking reishi mushroom, you know, Ganoderma.
Yep.
You know, lacquer mushroom, that really cool thing that grows on hemlocks and stuff.
That purple-looking mushroom.
Well, I've seen gnaw marks on some of these things. I bet you this is the guy. Hmm. He's probably eating that mushroom.
Well, it's healthy.
Yeah.
It's a medicinal mushroom.
So. Tell you what, you better keep his wits. Eats the wrong mushroom, he can build a glide straight. No. Seriously, man. Little guys. So the southern flying squirrel is also known as a pocket pet down south. Some southerners have created domesticated domestic pet from this guy. I've heard of that. Very, very friendly squirrel.
Must be soft.
Probably.
I would think.
Yeah. This is the most nocturnal squirrel there is the southern flying squirrel. And as I said before, seems to be where there's hardwoods, hickory nuts, acorns, cleared areas reverting to hardwoods. It will store some nuts, apparently, toward the end of the season in its nest.
Do they cache food like other squirrels throughout the forest?
I guess just a little bit in the nest. And that's only they said only the southern flying squirrel does that. But I don't think they do as much.
So it has to forage every day.
Yeah. I guess so. Now, how do you tell the difference? Telling the difference is difficult. One, you probably never see a flying squirrel. But if you do, the southern is mouse-like gray color. And basically the way you do it is you look at their belly, and if it's white from tip to tip, meaning from their little hands to their feet, it's probably a southern flying squirrel. The northern flying squirrel is white, but toward the hair is white, but towards the skin, the hair is like a gray or lead color. Come on. You know.
You're not going to see. If you see one, it's flying away from you, probably.
It's more reddish gray, the northern flying squirrel. But it's difficult. And the northern flying squirrel is about half the size. It's about the size of a chipmunk. 2 to 3 ounces. Whereas the southern flying squirrel could be anywhere from 3 to 5 ounces. Like a red squirrel. So we're talking about small squirrel.
Yeah.
You know. So, I don't know. What else? Northern flying squirrel. All right? Like I said, it's a little bit bigger. Color is more reddish-brown. And we already talked about it's towards the belly or the skin, it's lead-colored. But it lives primarily in conifer-based forests. So, yeah, the Adirondacks, portions of the Catskills, some areas even in the Hudson Valley where there's more hemlock or white pine, Norway spruce, I would imagine. Feeds mostly on lichen and fungi. So, what do you think? I don't know. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I don't know what the squirrel was I saw that day.
Man, based on where you are, I mean, there's a lot of oak there, so that's probably southern, right?
Most probably, likely. But I don't know.
But it is a mixed type forest. So.
Well, here's the thing. So, this is why it could be mixed. It's because during the winter, these guys, they get along so well, they'll just hibernate all together. So 50 squirrels can be all in each other's business, because, trying to stay warm. That potassium, that cool suit that they use to freaking get around and glide, it kind of exposes them to the elements.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. A lot of heat loss there.
Brought a lot of heat loss to that thing. So they actually do herd up, for lack of a better term, in those hollows. So there could have been a lot more flying squirrels, unfortunately, in that sugar maple leader.
Because you saw 8 or so?
I saw at least 8.
Wow.
Yeah. But who knows? So when an area is cleared or reverts back to hardwoods, it goes to southern flying squirrels. And like I said before, they get along so well, they'll be, you know, hiding out with each other during the winter. And apparently there's a parasite, unfortunately, that attacks the northern flying squirrel. They think it comes from the southern flying squirrel, according to Pennsylvania State University, but they're not sure. And for this reason, the northerns are actually endangered in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and West Virginia. In North Carolina, they're federally endangered. So.
Yeah, but that's also got to be the very southern end of their range. So are they doing better? Is there problems in the central or northern part of the range? You don't know.
I don't know. And it's like New York State's probably a good litmus test for this because we have kind of both forests. But I don't know. The northern just seems less adaptable.
Right.
It's eating lichen and fungi. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to have problems.
It's going to have problems. So, squirrels in the attic. Squirrels in the attic. So, I didn't know this. Maybe I have squirrels in the attic. But squirrels huddle up in the winter, as we said before, to stay warm. And that potassium leaves them vulnerable to cold temperatures. Attics serve as great places for flying squirrels to take cover in. Many people think it's mice or red squirrels. But often, it's flying squirrels, according to Pennsylvania State University.
Yeah, I helped help trap a few out of an attic this year.
Yeah.
Made a lot of noise. Landowner, oh, yeah? Yeah, they took me upstairs and took a broom handle and smacked on the ceiling a couple times, and they all scattered. It was very noisy.
Yeah, okay, wow. It's amazing. People don't notice them since they're nocturnal, so I don't know.
Right, well, I'm... Why would you?
I don't know.
This one's looking in the room at you.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., and tonight we've been talking about the flying squirrel.
Go away from my window. Leave at your own chosen speed. I'm not the one you want, babe. I'm not the one you need. You say you're looking for someone who's never weak but always strong, to protect you and defend you, whether you are right or wrong. Someone to open each and every door, but it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe. Go lightly from the ledge, babe. Go lightly on the ground. I'm not the one you want, babe. I'll only let you down. You say you're looking for someone who'll promise never to part, someone to close his eyes for you, someone to close his heart, someone to die for you and more. But it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe. You say each time you fall, to gather flowers constantly, and to come each time you call, and we'll love you for your life and nothing more.
Johnny Cash and June Carter. I like that version better than Bob Dylan.
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
You know,
I have that CD, and in the garage.
In the garage?
I turn on the tunes in the garage. That's the first song that comes on right there.
That song?
That song.
It's in the garage.
It's in my garage.
That's strange, huh?
Why?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
all right, so I got to tell a story.
All right.
All right, we're done with flying squirrels?
Yeah, we're done with flying squirrels.
That's all we got? All right, so I got to tell a story. I think I found the silliest buck in the woods, or dumbest, or...
Oh, yeah.
So we're hunting, right? Right? No, I'm just...
Yeah. No, I'm listening.
Making sure, all right? So we're hunting. There's four of us.
Who's we? Hunting club?
Yeah. But I'm trying to come around this point and maybe push a deer specifically to my wife, right? She's on the other side of this point. We have radios, so we can communicate.
Yeah.
And I'm coming around right exactly where I expect to find deer, stands up this deer. It's a four-point buck, so it's not legal to shoot in this part of the Catskill Mountains.
Yeah.
So I get on the radio. I said, I got a buck. It's not legal. Just warning everybody. You know,
right. Don't shoot.
Just want to put that out there.
Right.
So it's on everybody's mind to pay attention. Anyway, so I just figured it stood up. It's going to run like most deer do. I mean, that was the whole point. And it doesn't. It just looks at me. It's like 40, 50 yards. And then it goes back to feeding. I'm like, and the wind, most importantly, is at my back. Sometimes you jump a deer and if the wind's in your face and the deer can't smell you, sometimes it doesn't really know what you are.
Right.
But this deer could see me, and it could definitely smell me.
Yeah.
And it just went back to feeding. I'm like, what are you doing, buddy? This is deer season. You gotta run.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't. He just goes back feeding. So
that's how this works.
Yeah, right. So
you know the program, pal.
I was like, well, he's not a legal deer to shoot anyway, so I don't really care. He's in my way now, and I need to go through his path to get to where I need to go. So I start walking and expecting him to run at any second. He does not. I get within 10 yards of this deer.
Yeah.
And he's standing there feeding.
Yeah.
Paying attention to me, aware of my presence, but giving it almost no acknowledgement. He would just kind of look every now and then and go right back to feeding. So finally, I get that close to 10 yards or so, and he just, it's like I'm inconveniencing him, moving him along. Like, come on, let's go. Let's out of the way.
Yeah.
And he decides to turn and walk exactly the path that I wanted to walk. So now I'm pushing him through the woods. He's not running, and we're both at walking pace.
You're walking with each other.
With each other.
Which is weird.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's like if I had a leash, it would be like I'm walking my deer.
I still don't think you brought a gun that day. I think you had a guitar and you were strumming it. Right. And the birds were flocking around your shoulders.
Yeah,
and
this
buck is coming out. It got weird.
That's what it seemed like. So I'm on the radio giving play-by-play to the rest of the group here. Like, you guys aren't going to believe this. So I'm not kidding. I'd have to measure on a map, but it was at least 200 yards
right
to where I needed to go. And I followed this deer and pushed it along at 10 to 20 yards the entire time. At one time, I was on the radio with everybody. I said, I wish I had an apple. I bet it would eat out of my hands right now. And my wife says, well, you have a sandwich. Give it the sandwich. I'm not giving it my ham sandwich.
Yeah, really.
So, yeah, I just kept pushing it through the woods, and it went right to them. They saw it. And then we all grouped together, and it just walked away from us down the hill. Well, now it's getting dark, so we all walk off the hill, unsuccessful. Within 100 yards of the truck, at the bottom of the hill, guess what we found?
Mr. Buck.
That same Mr. Four-Pointer, and all four of us walked right by him at another 20, 25 yards again.
That's when you could have said something so rare at a hunting club is, I got a buck, but he's alive.
Right, I brought him home with me. No, so you know the saying, you know? Everybody asks, did you catch one?
Yeah, did you catch one?
If I had a lasso, I could have caught one.
You could have caught one. You could have caught him, man.
It's something else. So, yeah, I had a lot of experiences. We talk about it
a
lot.
That's crazy.
That's one of the reasons why we hunt. It's not to go, you know, kill a deer every time. It's to experience things you never normally would.
Yeah.
So why is it so tame? I don't know. It could have been raised as a fawn, or someone feeds it at a bird feeder every night and pets it. I have no idea. But
I don't know. That's strange.
Unfortunately for that deer, though, it'll likely be legal next year. And so this is a reason not to feed deer and tame wildlife, because next year it's unfortunate for the deer, but it's probably going to get shot.
Yeah.
Because of that, because it doesn't have an instinct to run from humans.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. Someone's probably feeding it, I would imagine.
I'm sure. It was within a few, I don't know, 500 yards of houses of a little development area. So,
yeah.
I think someone on that road was probably feeding it. And that's the direction it was moving to in the evening. So,
right.
It was heading that way. Could have followed it home if I wanted to.
Well, there's always next year, John.
No. I don't know. I should have a marking on it or something so I know. It's like, I don't know. I kind of feel bad, but next time I see it, though, I mean, if it's a legal buck, I'm not going to give it the opportunity. It's like, there it is. I'm going to take it now.
That's what I'm saying. It's always next year.
I'll just never know.
You know?
It'll be the next big one, maybe.
Some would say that's immoral, John.
But what I'm saying is I won't know. I won't give it the time to find out if it was the tame deer or not.
Some would say that that's not sporting. Some would say.
Again, I don't know.
All right, that's all the time we have in From the Forest, and see you next week. If you missed it, it was flying squirrels. So right. Try to go see one right now. They're out. Right now.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing, and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes, and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd end up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. Flowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the